Good evening and welcome to Current Issues. I'm your host, Tishar Talawi.
Welcome to Current, ladies and gentlemen. In this second hour, we will continue speaking with Captain Warren Boston. He was a senior investigator, actually, senior counsel,
the United States Navy Court of Inquiry investigating the USS Liberty or the attack on the USS Liberty. And in this second hour, we'll continue with Captain Boston,
and we will have joining us in a minute Mark Glenn, reporter with American Free Press, who was actually writing a story on the USS Liberty. Captain Boston, welcome back to the program.
Well, I hear you better now.
Good. Tell me, back in 1989, the Navy did admit that the inquiry, the Court of Inquiry, basically concentrated on communications, etc., as we started talking about the first hour. And some of the critics of Admiral Kidd think that he picked and chose the certain areas to investigate, and he did not investigate the whole thing as he was told by the president.
Well, I disagree with that. We looked in every area. I was counsel, and I called every witness that was available and had anything to say about the incident. There were people down below deck that weren't the topside, the witness, or be part of the action other than after the attack we were there. We looked at everything that was available in that time frame of 1 week. And the people that were on the ship that knew something, and of course the most cogent witness of all was McGonagall, and if you ever see that record, you can see how thorough he was, and even though he shot up pretty badly, he put together a pretty good story of what happened. He wouldn't talk about Liberty until just before he died. And he died here a couple of years ago. He obeyed the same command that Admiral Kidd and I did. Okay. Here's something I want to. It's just a short list here, and I want this on the record since you're talking with me. This was David Smythe, Smyth, wrote this in the U.S. Naval Proceedings in 2003, July 2003. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
He says, as a interested. Oh, I'm sorry. I can't even read what it said. He was editor with the Associated Press. He said, I sent David, he read this article and said, about 20 years ago, now this is David Smith when he was an Associated Press editor. About 20 years ago, I did an AP story on the Liberty incident that was published by the Los Angeles Times and large numbers of the other U.S. newspapers. I spoke to the following officials. Their titles corresponded to the positions they occupied at the time of the incident. And they all said, they all told me that the Israeli attack was deliberate and not an accident. Secretary of State Dean Rusk, Chief of Naval Operations Admiral Thomas Moore, Central Intelligence Agency CIA Director Richard Helms, and National Security Agency NSA Deputy Director Louis Trapello. I still would like to know what led them to this unanimous conclusion, but obviously you have no hope of finding out by questioning the nation's top intelligence and security official. The information is classified, and they're not going to tell you. I was, however, struck by the fact that they all stated their conclusions clearly, forcefully, and without any qualifications, hedging or ambiguities, because they had at their disposal the intelligence gathering capabilities of State Department, CIA, and NSA. I presume that they had solid grounds for their conclusion. I might add that I gathered other statements. Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara told me on the phone that he had no recollection of the attack on Liberty. I found this curious at the time, as I understood him to have the reputation of a man with a filing cabinet memory. I also talked to Admiral Isaac Kidd, who headed the Naval Court of Inquiry. I told him what the others had said, and then asked if he had any opinion. Admiral Kidd said, quote, "The giants of that time can speak out. I know when to keep my mouth shut," unquote. 36 years after have gone by since Liberty was attacked, it is not time for U.S. government agencies to release whatever classified information is in their files and clear the matter up once and for all. Anyway, that was the name David Smythe, SNYTH, and his associated editor. Editor for the Associated Press. You there?
Yes, yes. Now, I asked you a question in the first hour, and I don't know if you understood what I meant when I said about the two airplanes. I said at first we thought that it was the Egyptians who attacked the Liberty, and
yes,
two nuclear-ready airplanes or jet fighters took off of one of the courier groups there and was headed towards Cairo to bomb Cairo. Do you know anything about it?
Well, only thing I know is what I learned later, and by that I mean I had no access to that information until I read many years later after this opened up. And actually, I didn't read too much about the matter until after a Christopher book came out, and then that's when I got involved. But I had learned that they were trying, assuming, because the Israelis were putting out the word that it was an Egyptian ship that they hit, and that they were trying their darnest to make it look like the Egyptians, and that's when they said they wanted to sink it. And of course, there were two other reasons: the Syrian front was going to be opened up, and then they had this alleged massacre of 200 Egyptians. They had no place to put them. They said no POW camps. They were supposed to. Story was that this, and I guess a couple of Israeli generals later confirmed that, but anyway, we were, Johnson, I think that was in one of those books, either Operation Cyanide, was going to use that as a pretext to hit Cairo, but at least that's my way I remember reading it, but I don't have anything to support that conclusion other than wherever I read it, which still in the back of my mind.
Okay.
But we did. I'll tell you what, they might have mixed that up because the carrier group was performing off of Crete there. We're running a test on going into atomic war if necessary. And they had to change the configuration of the planes that were on the deck or were going to get airborne. And it took a little bit of time. I heard that later. But those are all stories that came out from other sources, and I'm not a very reliable witness to any of those stories other than what I've heard. Go ahead.
Very good. I want you to stay with me. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, I understand we have Mark Glenn with us, and we are trying to get him on as we speak. Mark, are you on?
I am.
Yeah, I know you are. I'm trying to get Mark on. Okay. All right. We are having problem connecting with Mark for some reason. Do we have him on, guys?
There aren't any calls to pick up.
Okay. All right. I think he's calling back. Now, while we wait on Mark, Captain Boston, if you know what you know now, I'm going to go back to probably a question I asked you three times already. If you know what you know now,
would you have done anything different back then?
Well, I don't think I could have done anything differently because I've spent my 35 years in active duty. I've put a lot of people in jail as a prosecutor. I've never put an enlisted man on report when I had lost a third of my fighter squadron on the Yorktown. But I don't think I would have ever given a second thought when the President of the United States and McNamara, the Secretary of Defense, not knowing that the outbreak, because Admiral Geisen knew things I didn't know. A lot of those people in but you say if I knew then, now, I didn't really have I was just a Navy captain. I wasn't a two-star, three-star admiral.
Okay.
And even some of them, there are an awful lot of those people that are apologists for Israel. It makes me sick to see
them. Now, let me ask you a question as a lawyer, as someone who knows the law. Can our political leaders get away with doing what they did back then, even if it was the president?
Well, you know, the only one that came close to hanging was old Nixon, of course. Clinton got away with it, and look at the things that he did, and even when they impeached him, why the yellow bellies were afraid to go through with it, and that's unfortunate. And they said, oh, it'd wreck the government or wreck the country. Well, I'm a firm believer that the truth should come out. And, you know, really, Mossad, I think their motto is win through deceit, or words of that effect. And CIA said something about the truth will prevail. But, you know, this, the whole mess of looking at the way the government operates and the things that are coming out. Now, I won't talk about my FBI days. I saw things. Now, there again, I would have a case wrapped up, take the over the U.S. attorney, and I had one in San Francisco, and the U.S. attorney said, I'm going to decline. I said, why? And so I've got everything here but a confession. And he said, well, I'm running for office. I want to keep my record. And they're political, you know, and I walked out of that office shaking my head and went back to my boss. And the answer I got from Harry Kimball, who was at SAC in San Francisco, we work for the U.S. attorney. Now, right now, you know, they fired 8 attorneys.
Right.
The U.S., and they're making a big deal out of that. Yet Clinton fired 98.
Right.
Nobody needs to talk about that.
You know what? I mean, with Clinton, you know, fire all of them, at least it's not going to look like that you're doing it for a political reason. But when you fire 8... and you lie about it, that's a problem. But I tell you what, we don't want to get into that. We have Mark Glynn with us. Welcome to the show, Mark.
This is a great show. I'm actually able to talk with him on the show.
No, actually, we have the great Ward Boston.
Mark, could you hear me? Could you hear me? Half the time I couldn't hear what was going on.
Yes, can you hear him, Mark?
No, I cannot.
You can't.
Well, I can listen here on the computer, but there's a delay.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about on the phone.
No, I cannot.
Oh, okay. That's good. So let's see if we can do it.
I can hear you, Mark.
Yeah, he can hear you. Now, Mark, tell me, you are working for many stories about the Liberty, I understand, a series. And you have been talking to Captain Boston. What do you think? Do you have new information now about the Liberty that you did not know?
Well, it's not necessarily that the information is new. It's been there, but it's been like seeds that have been sitting under the snow all winter. Now I think that the political climate, given what is going on, we find ourselves at war against a billion people. The political climate is warming to where these seeds are ready to burst forth now and produce fruit. These things, this was no less an act of war than when the Japanese attacked our fleet in Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941. The difference being that the Japanese did not have public relations and propaganda infrastructure in place in order to cover it up. And this is one of the things that the American people have got to understand is that on June 8th, 1967, the state of Israel declared war against the United States. It's just that the people of the United States did not realize it. And we are feeling the effects of this war today in the fact that we have lost 3,000 Americans on 9/11 and over 3,000 of our young men and women in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan. And who knows what's going to happen with regards to Iran. All of this would not be taking place if the American people were made aware of what took place with the Liberty incident. This is why, in my opinion, it is so important. It is something that is real. It is something that is concrete. We have witnesses there. We have credible witnesses. It doesn't require anybody to believe in any kind of conspiracy theories involving remote control planes or anything like that. All we need to do are look at the bare facts on the ground and listen to the testimony of three or four witnesses, and from that we can conclude that an act of war was instigated against the people of the United States.
Well, Mark, let me ask you this. I mean, when you say an act of war, that's very much, I mean, no one is going to, I mean, I understand when you attack somebody else's, another country's ship, that is an act of war, definitely. But apparently our president did not take it as such at that time, and his defense minister did not take it as such either, and they both actually have ordered the inquiry to say that it was mistaken identity and closed subject, or subject closed.
So they are collaborators in this act of war against the United States, and this is what the people of the United States have got to understand. It's not our country anymore. It's not our government anymore. It has been subverted to the interests of a foreign hostile power, whether it's Johnson or whether it's Bush, whether it was McNamara or whether it was Rumsfeld and Gates. The result is the same. We have a government that is in the service of foreign enemies. And so, you know, whether the president declares it to be an act of war or not is irrelevant. When the Japanese attacked the fleet at Pearl Harbor in 1941, it was an act of war, even though it took Congress some time to deliver a declaration for onto the desk of the president. Okay? So this is something that the American people have got to understand. Your sons and daughters are dying in the Middle East because this nation attacked us 40 years ago and we were not properly made aware of it. Now, as soon as the American people understand this fact, then they're going to understand that this supposed ally that we have in the Middle East is not an ally at all, at which point we can begin the process of taking back our country and removing our sons and daughters.
Now, Mark, you said something that is extremely, I mean, hard to even digest, that what took place 40 years ago is linked to what is taking place now in the Middle East. Tell me, what's the link here?
The link is, we are fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we are preparing to go to war in Iran, because the American people have bought into this fantasy that Israel is America's ally. If they were made aware of the fact that Israel was America's enemy, and the proof of this is what took place, not just on with regards to the attack on Liberty, but the cover-up that has taken place 40 years since then.
Okay, Mark, hold on a second, hold on. Captain Boston, do you see the attack on the Liberty as an act of war?
I thought of it as a bunch of murderous bastards who...
murderous bastards, is that an act of war?
Well, it was certainly an act of war by deception, but they claimed that they justified it, that it was an Egyptian horseship. Horseship as well. That sounds like a play on words, but an old battered ship that didn't resemble the Liberty at all. So they had all kinds of answers to support their position, and of course, Crystal went to the links trying to say it fogged the war and all this other garbage. But anybody that's ever flown a fighter plane and shot up a ship, which we did in World War II regularly, you know what you're shooting at, and you're not. And there wasn't any question; they knew it was our ship. But they tried to. They thought it was intelligence gathering, that we were going to release information that they were either had murdered the Egyptian or they were going to attack Syria and the Golan Heights.
Did you tell me yes?
Mark has indicated, and you put the equation together. Of course, any red blooded sailor or American would be happy, and my friend Bill Knudsen, who was an airborne on the way to knock the rascals out of the air, was recalled, and that in itself was almost a treasonable act by the President of the United States, allowing an American ship to be shot up and people killed and not retaliate in kind. And it was quite obvious who had done it, but
as Mark said, it's play on words. Anytime all of these politicians are on payroll, and of course Israel figured that out on how to manage to control them. They wine and dine them. Every one of them goes over there, and they really live it up. But and they come back and vote them more taxpayers' money, whatever it is, $12, $15, $16 billion a year. And I've been to Israel three times, two times during the Holy Land.
Tell me about your experience in Israel.
And I witnessed in my mind the mistreatment of so many of those people living in those awful refugees camps. And the other day, I didn't see much publicity on this, but the other day they had one, a sewage lake breaking ground people. You know, there's so many things, inequities over there. But back to the original question, acts of war can be committed in many ways, but in order for our country legally to be, well, it's supposed to be declared by Congress. But we managed for a long time to get ourselves in a quagmire, as they said. And just like the Tonkin Gulf, that's been proven. I think Johnson wanted us in there, and that's the way to get us there.
Okay. Now, if it had been any other country besides Israel, you think we would have went to war against that country for destroying one of our ships, correct?
Well, there again, look at Reagan almost went to war on Beirut, but instead he decided to pull out. And we had
But that was a little bit different. The ship was in international water. Our Marines were in the middle of that mist there in Beirut. And I think Reagan did the right thing for pulling out of that mist. But our ship was in international water. It was not even a fighting ship. It was an intelligence gathering ship.
Well, I won't argue that, Maris. I won't argue against that. But I think a better example is the coal. Which was we lost 18 or 20 sailors on the coal when it down Yemen. And there again, they tried to say they knew who did it, but they didn't. Now, that's the whole thing, by deception.
But I'm not talking about any other ones, because it could have been a false flag operation with the coal or anything. I'm talking about this one. We know that it was not a false flag operation. We know that it was one of our ships, and we know who attacked it. It's not like the coal, and it's not like anything else. Would we have went to war if, in fact, it was any other country than Israel? But what I wanted to follow up that question with is, how would you describe the relationship between the United States and Israel in simple terms? Is it like a stubborn son, or is it like a bad son that we can't raise right? Or what is the relationship between the United States and Israel?
Propaganda. They sold a bill of goods to the American public, and they do it through our Congress, and the Congress won't do anything about it, because they have been told that we need that little piece of land that the size of from here to the interior valley up to L.A. It's a small country, and Jesus easily could have gotten around like they said he did. But no, I don't have the answer to that, because number one, I'm not that smart, but number two, the politics that plays into that, and it's been playing ever since Harry Truman said the biggest mistake he made, and I've got that quote. And you know who wrote that? It was Sapphire, and he said when the Jews were under the thumb of Germany, they squealed like kids, and then when they got on top, that they were worse than the people bothered them before. So, old Harry Truman, in my book, was one of the top people in politics that we've ever had. But that's my own personal opinion. I can't answer your question.
Okay.
I think Mark's got a good point.
Let's go back to
prejudice or bias or feeling. I always feel for the underdog.
I understand.
But when they kill a bunch of our own people, like they did, my feeling and the drive behind my feeling in this is that the bereaved, the ones who lost their husbands, their wives, there were children, and never really had their day in court as far as recognition, and those that the six that were not identified have a common grave. They didn't put on that marker that who did it. It just said lost on the Eastern end of the Mediterranean.
Very good.
It's just been a propaganda deal, AIPAC. And actually, I think you could say we should hit war. or could have been a war from all the spies and all the damn mess that has been sold. And, of course, there again, Clinton's administration gave the Chinese, Jimmy Carter gave the Panama Canal away, and then he wouldn't go into well, anyway, politics is something that I just have to stay away from.
Okay. All right, Mark. Tell me, how do you see the relationship between the United States and Israel? Why are we would not have put up with any country attacking our ships and actually killing our people? Why are we, how do you see this relationship? I don't understand.
Well, it's a relationship that has changed over the years. The biggest weapon that obviously that they have in their arsenal, first of all, is their ability to cloud our thinking and to distract us. Are we paying attention? I watch the news every night. Are we paying attention to our young people dying in the Middle East now? We're reading about Britney Spears shaving her head, or about boyfriend of a model inheriting millions of dollars after she died. We have no idea what is going on with regards to our country. Now, 40 years ago, it probably could be said to be different. We weren't as stupid of a people as we are today. And I hate to have to use that term, but it is the truth. We really don't know anything about anything. But I think that it goes much deeper than that. Having gotten involved in this business of reading about this relationship between America and Israel, I think it goes much deeper than simply bribing our officials or threatening them with embarrassing pictures or anything like that. I really think what it boils down to is nuclear blackmail. I think that the Israelis have made it quite clear to every president since Johnson that if anything is done that would jeopardize her existence in any way, she calls it an existential threat, that she's going to take the world down with her. And incidentally, this has been Israeli military policy for the last 30 years, which is that if she's ever going to, it looks like she's going to go down, she's going to take the world down with her.
Yeah, but we can't live in this world thinking that way, that a country, if it's going to go down, then it will take the whole world with her. Stay with me, Mark. Stay with me. We're going to continue with this. But as I promised Captain Boston that I was not going to keep him for the whole hour, sir, I just wanted to say thank you very much for coming on the program. It really has been an honor and a pleasure having you here tonight.
You know, I'm sorry that I didn't have too good a hearing aid here to some of the questions that were asked until you repeated them, and it made it a little difficult. There's one thing I want to say, and then I'll get off.
Sure.
This is October the 29th, 2003. Israel's Enemies Revisit USS Liberty. Written by Jerome S. Kaufman, K-A-U-F-F-A-N. That periodically an enemy of Israel surfaces and once again revives the ancient canard of an attack by Israel on USS Liberty during the Six-Day War. That Israel fought against the combined forces of Egypt, Syria, Jordan, Iraq, Iran, Lebanon, and enthusiastically supported by the former Soviet Union. These powers were resoundingly defeated, undoubtedly due to the good graces of a higher being. In any case, just this week, October the 27th, 2003, in the Washington Times, Captain Ward Boston, a former Navy attorney involved in the investigation, suddenly had an epiphany wherein he revealed that he was told by President Lyndon Johnson, now conveniently deceased, and former Defense Secretary Robert McNamara, also now conveniently deceased, to conclude his investigation that the incident was an accident, despite overwhelming evidence to the contrary. 36 years later, for some obscure reason, the captain just signed an affidavit to that effect. One cannot wonder why the sudden epiphany. Has yet another U.S. government former official become the recipient of the well-known Saudi Arabian Golden Parachute Retirement Plan? It also seems to gracefully fall upon former secretaries of state, senators, journalists, and so forth. Well, that's interesting, because they said I didn't come out until Johnson and McNamara were both dead. So on September the 27th, 2004, ex-defense secretary ties the knot in Italy. Robert McNamara married an Italian-born widow in Italy, a private ceremony yesterday, with the 88-year-old former U.S. defense secretary calling the occasion a very happy day. He wasn't dead. But I if he were, then nobody told him. So anyway, did you hear me?
Yes. Yeah.
Huh?
Yes, very clear.
Well, then anyway, that Rob James Jerome S. Kaufman, he must have been a shill with Crystal and his favorites. But he starts out saying, you're going to have to get organized and fight Boston.
Apparently, of course.
Okay,
well, anytime you say anything about Israel, you are an enemy of Israel, you're an enemy of the Jews, and you are an anti-Semitic. So,
I've been called anti-Semitic. Yet I studied oboe with the sole oboist in New York Philharmonic before World War II. Harold Domberg is probably the greatest oboist that ever lived, and it was the closest, dearest friend I probably ever had before I came in the Navy in 1942. And Harold Domberg and I were just like brothers. There's not an anti-Semitic bone in my body, but like I say, Thomas Jefferson said he loved the country, but he didn't like some of the leaders. I love my country, and I don't like some of the leaders, too, but at the same time, I don't like these leaders of other countries that end up, and just like Sharon, they're going up on the Temple Mountain and causing all the problems that develop there. Well, he's still alive, isn't he?
That's a good question.
I think he had him locked up someplace.
He's locked up in some place, but I think it's too cold wherever he is, but they don't want to say where he is.
But I'll say there's another example. Deception. Win by deception. Okay,
right.
It was nice talking to you, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for coming
on.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen. Of our own in a couple of minutes, Gary Brummett, I believe. He's from Louisiana, and as a matter of fact, he's been on Tom Parker's show, and last year we broadcast that on the internet, and we also had that interview on Google's video with Tom Parker and Gary and another guy who's from actually local from Lafayette. But in a couple of minutes, we're going to have Gary with us, and we will. Now, Gary was on the Liberty ship actually when it was attacked, and we're going to ask him how was it during those hours of probably I think it almost like 24 hours. So anyhow, Mark.
Yes, sir.
Si, senor.
But yes, captain.
No, the captain is gone. Now, listen, this is crazy. It's beyond my comprehension that people with this anti-Semitic weapon that's being thrown at them, or even when they just threaten to use it, people are running scared. Why in the world, how can we defeat this anti-Semitic thing? Because I know, and I stated this on my radio program last Saturday, that probably 99.999% of people who are being labeled as anti-Semitic, they are not. But this weapon is being used, and it scares the heck out of people, and people will not talk because they don't want to be labeled as anti-Semites. Tell me, how can we get rid of this? How can we defeat this weapon?
Well, as with anything, it takes people losing their fear. Now, as it stands right now, we are a very comfortable people, okay? Even those of us who are very poor, we have food on our tables at least three times a day. Our houses are warm. We have running water. All of these things, we don't know what it's like really to grow up with nothing. We don't know what it's like to grow up in a war zone. I can guarantee you that when things change in this country, and I believe that they will unless some drastic changes take place, when things change and people begin to feel the bite, they're going to start asking questions as to how all of this came about. And when they do, they're not going to settle with, pardon my French, with any half-assed answers. It's going to be hard to blame the Muslims when you have all of these rich Jewish politicians, media types, and all of the rest of that who are sitting there with red faces and who obviously are guilty for having brought all of this on.
Okay.
And so when the American people start to feel the bite, and particularly, you know, the other thing that I have noticed since I've been following this is that, you know, the Zionists are getting very sloppy. Okay, this last operation with 9/11, they were sloppy enough that 200 of their agents were caught were arrested. Some of them were sloppy enough to allow themselves to be seen cheering as the towers were coming down. Okay, they are suffering from a certain amount of arrogance and insolence right now. They feel that the American people are, it's like two burglars who have broken into a home. And they look at the guy, and the guy is sitting over there, and he's snoring away, and they say, okay, we don't have to be so careful about pulling the drawers out. This guy is a heavy sleeper. And so they get careless. Now, I believe the Zionists, and I hate to have to predict things, but, you know, with this next thing, this upcoming war with Iran, I think that they're going to pull something extraordinarily large in order to mobilize the American people into supporting this thing. And I think that they're probably going to be sloppy. You know, we have good people in our intelligence services. We have good people in our law enforcement services. And they can't all be silenced. There are FBI agents who are fully aware of what is going on with regards to Israel and her spying and her sabotage in the United States.
Very good.
And they cannot be kept silent forever. At some point, and whether it's them or whether it's the military, I mean, that's the thing, too. The military can only be pushed so far before it's going to say, forget it, we're gonna throw these bombs out and we're going to start over.
Mark, thank you very much. I'm going to have to let you go because I have a lot of people calling, and they promised they're buying us new phones, and when that happens, I'll be able to keep everybody on at the same time. I'm going to have to let you go because I'm going to talk to Gary, and then I have other people waiting.
Okay.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it. Okay, before I go to Gary, let me just ask a couple of these people. Ramsey, go ahead.
Hello, sir.
Yes, hi. Very quick, please.
Hello. In this question that was the first time Israel attacked the United States because of the one affair in 1954,
right.
You got the John F. Pollard case,
right.
You got, and recently you got the Louis Libby, Square Libby, the Jewish, who was convicted of treason, and he got 25 years sentence, thank God. And sir, regarding your question about the anti-Semitism, sure. There has been studies that have been done regarding anti-Semitism, that it's all hysteria. And the anti-Semitism is always related to people who criticize Israel. So it has nothing to do with anti-Semitic.
Right. You know, actually, they're digging their own grave with that one, because now people go on to say, you know, this anti-Semitism, if you're against Israel, then you're anti-Semitism, then they're going to buy it anymore. Ramsey, thanks for the call. I'm running out of time. I'm sorry, I have to... Thanks, bye. Okay, Gary, hold on with me. I got one more to go to, and then I'm all you. Good. No, I think he's gone. I believe Freedom is gone. Freedom, go ahead.
Dr. Talawi, and is Mark Glenn still there, you guess?
No, Mark, we're working on the phones. I can only have one person at a time.
Okay. Here's what I want to ask you. Right now, I'm on the horns of a dilemma. Look, we know that the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, 12 days ago, captured 15 British sailors.
Right.
Who apparently went over the right. Big line into their territory, right. And they captured them. But what I can't understand is this. George Bush and Tony Blair and all these guys, when they captured Afghanis and whatnot on the battlefield, we took them to different CIA prisons and we waterboarded them and we tortured them. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
If Ahmadinejad and the Revolutionary Guard is so evil, why haven't they tortured the 15 British soldiers? Could you please explain the moral dilemma to me? If Ahmadinejad is so evil, why are we the ones that did the torture and the rendition at Guantanamo and all them places? Could you explain the moral difference for me? Thanks, Dr.
Okay. Well, I think it's obvious because most of the people that we supposedly captured, we did not capture them. We just picked them up on the streets of Afghanistan and the streets of Islamabad in Pakistan. We brought them to Guantanamo Bay and other CIA camps, secret camps, and tortured them. And the majority of them, by the way, were innocent people, innocent bystanders, who just were in the wrong place at the wrong time. And we heard a lot of stories that these people, one story that I heard, he was a Pakistani going to Afghanistan on a vacation when 9/11 happened, and basically, or when we attacked, because he was there and he could not leave to go back to Pakistan. We brought him over here to Guantanamo Bay, and then after a year or 2 years, we sent him back saying, look, we're sorry after we have tortured him. But, you know, these are soldiers who were caught in Iranian waters, and they are being treated very well. But I think, you know, the Iranians have gotten what they want out of this, because the United States have released one of their, if you remember a couple of months ago, when we picked up a couple of Iranians there in Iraq, and that's basically why they took these 15. So it worked. Let me go to Gary. Gary, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here. I can barely hear you, though.
Okay. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, I can hear you pretty good now.
Okay. Gary, you were actually on the USS Liberty when it was attacked. I want you just to take us back and, you know, in a few minutes, just tell us, how was it? How did you spend those many hours from when the attack took place until you guys were rescued?
Well, the day we were attacked, it was just a normal operation site day for us, although we knew we were in a hostile zone. But we were an American ship flying the American flag on the bow, port and starboard, with the letters GTR 5. GTR was 5 foot tall letters. The 5 was like a 10 foot letter with USS Liberty. Port and starboard on the rear, on the fantail of the ship. You know, even though we were in a hostile zone, this was an American ship, and it's not likely somebody's going to attack such a vessel. We were conducting signet operations, signal intelligence. We were supposedly basically there monitoring, to try to monitor the Soviets, but we were monitoring everybody in the region. We came under attack. There were 6 antennas on the ship that were for communications purposes. 5 of them were up and online. They were taken out in the first pass by heat-seeking missiles. And our door to the world was closed. We couldn't even get out an SOS until some of the ETs, the electronic technicians, patched together some line to the tower that had been down and got up online. And then this frequency itself was being jammed. Which has brought a strange question for a long time, or begged a question for a long time. If Israel thought we were an Egyptian ship, why were they jamming U.S. naval frequencies? Once we did get the message out, the Captain Joe Tully of the USS Saratoga, he was the skipper, he's now deceased, immediately launched, and he told me back in the early 90s he wondered why Indian on the America hadn't launched. And of course, this first bunch of planes were recalled. They relaunched off the America, and Admiral Larry Geis was the Squadron 60 commander. He was in charge in the field there of everybody. And when they relaunched planes, they notified the Pentagon that rescue aircraft was on the way. Well, these rescue aircraft, once Robert McNamara got this message, he immediately said, get the planes back on the carrier. And guys challenged this order, and which was his right under the circumstances, and they passed the phone call from the Pentagon to the White House, and Johnson told Admiral Geis, get the planes back on the carrier. I'm not going to do any. I don't care if all the sailors drowned. I'm not going to do anything to embarrass an ally. And
now tell me, did you guys know what was happening in the first few hours, or did you know what was that was the Israelis attacking you?
That is correct. Now, we didn't know who was doing it until it was all over with. See, that's another point there. I mean, that's a real bone of contention. How did Lyndon Johnson know he was attacking us when we didn't even know he was attacking us till it was all over?
Now, what was your job on the Liberty?
I was an engineer. I was one of the guys. It was my job to make the ship move and get us to wherever in the devil that we needed to go so the CPs could conduct their operations.
So were you like in the engine room?
Right. I was in the fire room. I was a third class petty officer.
Didn't it flood due to the attack?
Beg your pardon?
The engine room, it was flooded with water at that time?
No, we were, now we had some armor-piercing rounds come through the side of the ship, which these came through way after they said they had done quit firing on us, or at least the official record says it. And we had leaks there that filled up the bilges, you might say, but we didn't have flooding down there. We were three frames or about 15 feet from total disaster. Had torpedo hit the engine room, fire room area, the ship would have immediately broken half and sank, and they would have got what they were after anyway at that point.
Now, were you aware that the Israelis were circling? Because they did circle in the morning.
Right. Well, they had reconned us roughly 12 times.
Right. Was that information passed on to you, to everybody on the ship?
Well, later on, we knew who was reconning us, which, you know, everybody felt good about that. We thought, well, they're our ally. You know, we're not worried about it. They know who we are. And by James fighting ships at 10:55 a.m., June 8, 1967, Tel Aviv time, they had put us on their war room charts as USS Liberty. They had ID'd us through James fighting ships, a British publication. But they had reconned us 10 or 12 times. I don't know how many times, probably 5 or 6 times I heard the captain or whoever the officer of the deck was come on the ship's MC or the public address system and request the duty photographic team to come to the bridge, you know, to photograph and try and ID these planes that were bugging us. I mean, they knew at all times who we were and where we were. It's just impossible to even entertain the thought that they didn't know who we were. It was a bright, clear, sunshiny day, limitless visibility.
Okay. Well, did you know if your ship had made contact with the Sixth Fleet that was there at that time while it was under attack? Did you have any idea?
Yes, the Liberty did finally get up on one radio frequency off one of the towers, the only one that wasn't blown out of the doubling down. And they did get the word out, and it was picked up by a radioman on the USS Saratoga. And they asked for authentication because everybody's got a code name, a password, you might say. Ours was Rockstar. And, of course, our radio operator gives the guy on the other end the cussing and keyed the mic and said, listen to what's going on. And then they realized that, you know, it was a for-real event. This wasn't a hoax that somebody was playing on a Navy frequency. And the what really ended up saving us that day, and I think most of the guys would agree to this, later on, because we were under aerial attack at this point. That was prior to the torpedo boats getting to us. Our Sixth Fleet aircraft could have gotten to us before the PT boats would have, and, you know, could have stopped that from happening, which that killed 25 men and virtually destroyed the ship. It was, you know, decommissioned after this all happened. But I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. Did you guys, were you wondering at one point, where are our guys? Why aren't they coming to help us?
Oh, yes. We thought that they were coming to our aid. And what I was fixing to say, and like I say, I lost my train of thought. The attack on our ship The Israeli version says, you know, after the torpedo hit, they came alongside and said, oh, can we help? Well, that ain't exactly true. They came alongside, but they were still firing on us. Now, they did eventually quit firing, but I contend that they only quit because they run out of ammunition. If you look at the ship and you look at all the holes and the indentations in it, they had to have been out of ammunition. But a radio operator on the Saratoga sent back a message at some point later that help was on the way. Now, as I understand it, and I'm not a communications technician, or an ET, this was broadcast on an open-air frequency. Anybody out there that was listening could have intercepted this message. Well, see, it was about this time, that's when the attack stopped.
Now, let me...
Because they knew, jet planes and all would have been out of the way, but the MTVs, the motor torpedo boats, could not have evacuated the scene before our fighter aircraft would have got there and ID'd them.
Okay. Just for the sake of time, because we only have a few minutes left, did you guys know what were you doing there? I mean, was the mission explained to everybody that we are in international water and we are listening? I mean, did you know what the mission was?
Right. The captain had, we had just maybe 5 or 10 minutes prior to the start of the attack. The captain had come on the ship from one MC, the PA system, and said, you know, we're 12.5, 12.6 nautical miles off the coast of the United Arab Republic. There is hostilities on the beach. You know, we knew where we were at. Egypt claimed 12 miles, Israel claimed 6.
So you were definitely international waters. Did you lose any
right, we were in international waters. We were a neutral. We were
now,
a non-combatant ship.
All we had
was 450 caliber machine guns on that ship, which was only good for just repel borders type situations. It wasn't something you fight with.
What type of injury did you suffer, Gary?
Beg your pardon?
Were you injured on that day?
I got a Purple Heart for some scratches I got. That's about it.
Nothing major.
No, sir. Not
did,
to me.
Did you lose? Did you lose any close friends on that day?
Well, I mean, I was on that ship for probably 15 months at that time, and that was my third cruise on the Liberty. And there were very few people on board that I didn't know. We had picked up 9 specialists in Rota, Spain 6 days earlier. And of these 6, 2 of the 3 Marines got killed, 1 of the civilians got killed, and 2 of the sailors out of the 3 got killed. So they didn't fare real well. But did I know everybody? Yes. There were very few of the guys that... that I didn't know
except the new ones
we had just picked up.
Okay. Well, Gary, I know you're going to be down in our area, I believe, in May sometimes. Stay in touch with me. Let's keep in touch so we can have you here on the program to tell us more about that day.
Well, I would like to do that where we have a little bit more time and we can cover the story better from that day to there.
Very good.
Point out the current events.
Very good.
May I ask you a question?
Very quick. We have 1 minute left.
Ward Boston, was he there tonight?
Yes, he was. He was very good.
Okay.
He was excellent. And I...
All right. Well, I appreciate it. And I guess I will talk to you later.
Very good. Thank you, Gary. Appreciate it.
Okay.
We only have like half a minute left, so we will see you next Tuesday, hopefully with another story. And just go learn about the USS Liberty, and we do need to talk about our relationship with Israel. We must talk about this relationship because it's costing us a lot, and especially now, it did not just cost us the 34 that we lost back then. Now it's costing us over 3,300 people in Iraq. So we'll see you next Tuesday. Go do the right thing. See you then.